It's time for Jason Wilde on the Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN.
That has to be changed. Pebble, can you work on that?
It's sure
time
what do you want?
Now for the Doctor of Football, Brian Bulaga.
So I figured what you wanted, yeah.
And Jason Wilde. With that much energy, I want more energy than done for anything else. It's so good, Homer actually listens. Jason would have to give approval to that part of it. Or the Doctor of Football, too, but that's for a later time. All right, Doc, you're the nice guy. Ask him how he is.
Jason, how are you?
I'm picking up some dog poop at the moment. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. That sounds fantastic. That sounds great.
You have a dog. You love dogs. We got to get Tausch on board with dogs.
Believe me, I have a dog that it's like picking up like horse dropping. So like, I get it. Like my dog's like a horse. So like, I get it. It's not picking up little dog poop. It's like human size.
Oh, not to interrupt, but I am. Why would you get such a big dog?
Because I've always had big dogs. So it's Bull Mastiff. It's a Bull Mastiff. He's huge.
He likes big dogs, and he cannot lie.
Yeah. I mean, listen, he's just a big old teddy bear. He's scary looking, but he's a teddy bear.
Just like you.
Yeah, exactly.
Nah, Bulaga is tougher than his dog. Come on.
I don't know, man. Leroy's a tough guy.
Not no
Leroy's
more.
Leroy's a tough guy. Yeah, Leroy's a tough dude, man. He's a tough cookie. Jason, do you on KBN they asked me about, you know, top five defense, top five offense. They said they asked you the same question. I'm going to go a step back from that about the offense. Do you see a way that this offense gets inside the top 10? And if you do or if you don't, from the past offenses that I was on or even that I wasn't on when Tausch was there or even when I was gone when Aaron was there with LaFleur, what does this offense have to do to get to that point? Like what do they need to do to get into that top 10 type offense? And, you know, what are they missing? Because they got pieces, right? They got players.
Sure.
They're investing in the O-line. I mean, they got the guys. Like, what's missing from that?
Well, there's a couple things. I mean, first, let's be honest. We all like Jordan Love. He's got to get better. He's got to be more consistent. It's not like he was bad last year. I don't want people to think that I'm saying that he was bad. But he would be honest, right? He talked about how his accuracy was inconsistent, and it's usually a factor of his footwork. He talked about, you know, some of the decisions that he made. We certainly know Matt LaFleur has talked about that. So there's other factors beyond him, but it starts with him, right? He was only sacked 14 times, which obviously tells
really
you
good.
That's phenomenal. And I think it's because he's good about getting the ball out most of the time. He's elusive. I mean, he wasn't as elusive last year because obviously he was dealing with the leg injuries, but you know, the offensive line has to be better than it was. And you know offensive line play better than anybody. It wasn't like they were bad either. But I would say this. It just feels like, to me, offensively, and I think this is how Matt LaFleur feels, there's just another gear for just about everybody except maybe Josh Jacobs. Like, Josh Jacobs scored 15 rushing touchdowns. He had his first receiving touchdown of his career. He ran for 1,300 yards, and most of it, more than half of it, was after contact. And I love making this comparison because he had 1,329 yards on the season, and nearly 800 of it was after contact. Saquon Barkley had 2,005 yards. He had 1,328 yards before contact. So he had one fewer yard before contact than Josh Jacobs had total. So that tells me that his offensive line was opening up much larger holes for him, and he was getting through them, right? So you put all that together, And I think there is the potential of this group being a top five offense. But when they asked me that question, you know, I said I thought the defense, first of all, because they were already there, right? They were fifth in total defense, sixth in scoring defense. But on top of that, in year two of their system, I think they're going to be better. And I think that while Goody may be overselling it a little bit, I do believe that with a new defensive line coach and with a second year in the system, that some guys that at times looked ineffective are going to be better. So, you know, are Baron Sorrell and Oliver, the two edge rushers they drafted, undersized guy, are they going to be, you know, huge difference makers? Probably not, right? Fourth and fifth round picks. But they're in a position now where, you know, they've invested in these big time first round picks, and it's time for Devontae Wyatt, who was off to a great start last season before he hurt his ankle, to play that way more consistently. It's time for Rashawn Gary, who is paid like an elite pass rusher, to at least be closer to being an elite pass rusher than he has been. Time for Lucas Van Ness to be like most Iowa guys and put his hard hat on and be more productive. And I think all those things are distinctly possible, and that's why I have a little more faith in that group being a top five unit than I do for the offense as of right now.
Jason, who was they picked up the fifth year option on Wyatt today, is that correct?
They picked it up on Wyatt yesterday. They did not pick it up on Quay Walker today.
Okay, so they didn't pick it up on Quay, they picked it up on Wyatt. What was Wyatt's number that they picked it up on? What was that amount?
13-something, 13 million. And, you know, obviously defensive linemen are part of a very valuable group. At the same time, yep. It wasn't, his number wasn't out of whack with other defensive tackles. On the other hand, Quay Walker, because inside linebackers and outside linebackers, edge rushers and 3-4s, are all lumped together, and they take that formula for the third through the 25th highest paid player at the position, and then that's what the fifth year option is for. Quay's was $14.7 million, which would be more per year, or at least close to it per year, as Zach Bond, who just signed a 3-year deal, like with a bunch of guaranteed money in it. So they, you know, they're looking at that, and while they like Quay Walker, and they like that he's finally kind of coming into his own, he hasn't played like a guy who should be the sixth highest paid inside linebacker in the league. He's not in Roquan Smith's category, right? So, you know, at least and I don't want to call it spin because I think it's the truth, but I think their philosophy is, all right, we still want him, but we didn't want him at guaranteed $14.7 million for 2026. And by the way, it also guarantees this year for him then. So he's got $2.9 million or whatever for this year. They would like to package that amount up, make it a signing bonus, and sign him to a 4-year deal because they do believe he is becoming the player that they picked him to be in the first round in 2022.
So you believe he's going to get an extension?
I think that's their intention. Now, I need to be honest about my bias. I mean, I thought that for a guy that I was not sure was any good at all after his first two seasons, I don't know where you were at with him, but I had serious doubts that he was anything more than just a guy. I thought we started to finally see him look like the guy that made sense to be drafted as early as he was. And that, I mean, I thought if you look at the San Francisco game and the Miami game, he looked like a guy that could tilt the field in your favor. Whether or not he can, you know, we never got to see whether he could sustain that because then a couple weeks later he gets hurt against Seattle, misses the last three regular season games. I thought he was making a lot fewer mental errors, looked like he was filling the right gaps. So, you know, but maybe I'm wrong, and maybe the Packers, you know, subconsciously or even consciously and quietly and not saying the quiet part out loud are like, yeah, we're still not sure he's that good. So we're going to say we want an extension with him and we want to keep him because that sounds like we really like him, but in truth, we're kind of like, we'd like to see more before we give this guy some money. I don't think that's what they're doing, But we absolutely have to at least acknowledge that possibility.
Yeah, I mean, I think he last year I thought he was playing better. I thought obviously the injury did not help, and I mean I give the guy a lot of credit for going out there against Philly and hobbling around and playing. I'm going to give him that much for sure. That's a tough assignment to do against Philly.
Yeah, he did not look like he was healthy though.
No,
at all.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. But I give him credit for it. Do you think that this defense, with obviously, you know, I get the two pass rushers they added. Obviously, it's, you know, they're, you know, fourth or fifth round picks, whatever they are, undersized guys. I mean, I guess 6'4", 260 isn't that undersized, so to speak.
No, but the other guy's definitely.
Yeah.
He's not even, I don't even know if he's 6 feet or if he's listed as 6 feet, but you know, we talked about that with Goody about, you know, the idea of guys that don't fit maybe your size. But again, hey, I'm talking to a guy whose arms weren't as long as they want their offensive lineman's arms. And you had a great career. I mean, that's why you can't, you know, rule guys out just because some measurable. Now, I would say quarterback hand size, I might rule people out, right? Because you're asking for fumbles and turnovers. But, you know, if a guy's an edge rusher, if he's able to get, you know, underneath guys and he's got a diversified approach in terms of his pass rush moves, unlike LVN, who obviously needs to develop those, I'm willing to take a chance on a guy that's not exactly ideal size. And I think Goody obviously showed that he is too with that pick.
Yeah, so Homer and I opened up with this. Do you think this defense needs Jaire Alexander, or do you think it's a want?
Well, which Jaire Alexander am I getting?
You're getting one that's going to be hurt about half the time.
Yeah, then no, I'm not signing up for that.
Dang. Okay, what if he's there two-thirds of the time?
I'm more interested now. You know, if I get 13 out of the 17 games and none of them are the thing where he says he's good to go on a pitch count, plays 10 snaps, and then the rest of the game in Chicago he's out, I'm not interested in that. I mean, Brian will tell you this, coaches like certainty. You know, Isaiah Simmons, the guy that they picked up to play linebacker, safety, and special teams, you know, he was the 8th overall pick. Brian and I talked about this earlier in the week when he was cousin subbing for Tausch. Like, has he lived up to his draft status? Obviously not, right? He's on his third team in 7 seasons. He has not been worthy of the 8th overall pick. But you know what he has been? Durable. Guy's never missed a game since he came into the league. And Brian said it on our show. That's hard to do, especially playing his position. He started 42 games, so it's not like he just, you know, has been able to play in all these games because he's sitting on the bench most of the time.
I got a certainty for you. The Packers, it's a certainty the Packers are a better football team, better defensive team, even when Jaire plays only 8 games.
They're better. Look, of course.
All right.
What are you pretending that's some sort of a major revelation? The guy's a 2-time All-Pro. They are better. In the games in which he plays, their defense is better.
Yeah.
No blank, Sherlock.
Well, no, but they're a better football team if he plays in only 8 games, which is why you should join my club that you want him on the team even if he starts only 8 games.
I don't want him if I only get him for 8 games, though, because then I'm juggling in the other 9.
That's not that hard.
And it's not like he's playing the 8 consecutive games.
Fine.
You know, like, if you told me that I would get 8 games from him, but they would be the last 8 games of the regular season, and he would start the year on PUP, and then he would play into the playoffs, which obviously none of this is all in the hypothetical realm. But, like, if you told me, all right, you're going to have him for 8 games, there are going to be 8 in a row to close the year, and then you're going to have him in the playoffs, then I'm willing to do that. But if I'm going to have him for 2 games, then I'm going to be without him for a game, then I'm going to get him back for a game, then he's going to be gone for 2 more games, I'm going to get back for 3 games. He's going to miss 4 games. Like, I'm not – no. Like, that's the stuff that drives coaches. You know, Matt LaFleur with all of his haircuts and whatever else, I assume there's some coloring going on too, they because should, that's the stuff that gives them gray hair.
They should read Vince Lombardi's book. He treated players differently based on how good they were.
Yeah. You don't know that LaFleur doesn't treat people differently.
No, they have to accept fewer games from Jair than what they would want from someone.
But that's not the same as treating someone differently. Like, they let him, like, Keyshawn Nixon is the poster child for that. Like, Keyshawn Nixon gets away with stuff that Brian Bulaga would not.
All right, a take two. That one didn't work. I got to move on. Is it a plus that Xavier McKinney is supposedly working out with him? One, you have to tell me if that's accurate. And two, does it have any influence on Jair's future with the Packers, if in fact it's true?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely worked out with him once earlier. I have not. I don't know where you're getting that recent update.
I don't know that it's recent at all.
Okay, that's par for the course on this.
Thank you. Bye. Thanks, Jason.
But I would say this. I think, and I know because I talked to guys in the building about this early on last season, and I know I said it on this show with you guys. Like, I don't want to give – when he was playing well, he had the pick six in Tennessee, right? And Jair was telling me and telling Domofsky that, hey, maybe the suspension was just what I needed. I just feel I'm in a totally different headspace. But when I talked to other people in the locker room, one of the things that they kept bringing up is the influence that Xavier McKinney had on him and that they would sit next to each other in meetings. And obviously now he's working out with him. So, you know, I know that there was frustration with him in the building. I know that they don't like the uncertainty from week to week of whether he's going to be available. I don't think they hid their frustration with that well. But I do, I keep going back to this, but they all agree that when he's healthy, he's still a top flight player. But yep. It's when he plays, and coaches just hate not knowing day to day, week to week, if a guy's going to be available. They'd rather have a guy of lesser talent, Carrington Valentine, who was an underrated player in my opinion. They would rather have a guy of lesser talent that they could count on to play most of the 17 games than do this dance with somebody who's a better player, more accomplished, but certainly a different type of cat, and you don't know his availability.
I know. Jason Wilde Enterprises has something else coming up. Jason, thanks for the time.
It's not, well, don't make it sound like I've got some sort of, like, speaking engagement or something. I'm appearing on another program in the GKB family on ESPN Madison, Jim, Matt, and Molly.
I thought I presented that pretty positively, Brian. Is Jason a little edgy?
No, I don't think he's edgy.
You have that effect on me.
That's guilty as charged. Thanks for being so kind to GKB. Bye.
Bye.
Next.